This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Rick, more success for you on a Thursday night. You're undefeated in Lumen Field. Congratulations on a 1-0 start.
Thank you, David. We got more pressing issues, though, Dave.
What's happening?
Chris, more pressing issues. So this is what I was concerned about, right, is that, you know, new studio, you know, Santiago has been in the studio, and I was just nervous that the more time he spent around, you know, Anthony, who's the board op and producer of the Primo Trip Pirates, that it could rub off on Santi, our very own Ray Santiago. And he, too, could become Hack Sparrow and just start ripping off takes.
And is that what's now happened?
I mean, you tell me. What?
The fact that you won your Thursday game and are more upset, bothered, intrigued by Santiago's thievery is an interesting lead to the show. So go ahead.
Well, this is interesting because this directly affects us and our reputation, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know what it is.
Well, I mean, we pride ourselves. You brought it up yesterday that one of your awesome takes was actually stolen.
Was it not?
It's your intellectual property was stolen.
Yes, stolen.
Completely stolen.
Stolen.
And I was nervous. The more time Santiago spends in the studio with Anthony, he could now all of a sudden, you know, transition into a premature pirate. You're a good math guy, Dave. What is 18 hours ago was what time?
18 hours ago. All right, so you're looking at like, I believe you're looking at like 2 o'clock yesterday, something in that range.
So that's by the time our show is over, that's hours after our show is over.
Hours, yeah, enough to watch a full football game. Yes.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. At any point during yesterday's show, did I say that the person most excited that the Knicks drafted Obi Toppin was going to be Walt Clyde Frazier? Did I say that?
Multiple times. Not only did you say it, but you had references to what you expected Clyde to use during the course of success for Obi Toppin.
Correct. The pick and popping, Obi Toppin.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
There's no stopping Obi Toppin.
Right.
Two scoops with one free topping.
I didn't hear that one. Yes.
Okay. Santiago, 18 hours ago. It just hit me, Anthony Pusick. You know who's going to be happier than anyone about Obi Toppin being here? At Walt Frazier.
Wow.
You can hear it already, can't you? Obi Toppin is popping, and he's not stopping. This season is going to be a treasure.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, and good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good, Dave.
I didn't want to not, you know, show respect to you on a football Friday of all days. Here's what I'll say about football Friday.
But we're probably going to be doing more talking about basketball than the Knicks, no?
Tons of Knicks conversation.
Don't you hate that about New York sports, though? Like, during the regular season, we don't spend a lot of time talking about the teams because they're so bad, but we're talking about another sports team and another sports league because it's their talent acquisition phase, because it's their off-season.
We might talk more about the Knicks today than we do after days that they've played, Dave,
I have no doubt we'll talk more about the Knicks today than we would in March.
Yes, I fully agree. But we'll get there in a moment. To get back to this point, I'm going to defend Santiago a little bit, Rick, and you tell me if you agree or you disagree. Raymond has a million things going on. He's all by himself running the show. He's got audio. He's got callers. He's got guests to line up. And I'm thinking that, and I did hear that on yesterday's show, when you said that, maybe he wasn't paying attention and didn't hear you say that. And then later during the course of the day, he and Anthony, you know, had the same epiphany that you had earlier in the day.
Or he actually heard me say it, not realizing that I said it, and then took it as his own original thought.
If he did that, he's a bad guy. Otherwise,
even if I didn't realize it? Because I'm pretty much leaning towards, like, yeah, I didn't hear any of that. And we were all cordial this morning, and we opened the show, and it's Friday, and everyone's feeling good. And then all of a sudden, I get this steel chair to the back.
It's exactly what's happening
right
now.
This is a heel turn right here.
It's exactly what's happening.
Which is amazing to me, though.
Monday Night Raw.
I can't, like, I could make a point like that. Which is, I mean, it's a pretty funny point. But the second I say, like, hey, do you guys smoke me? Or, like, anything, like, borderline outrage, instantly hears that. And chastises me.
Well, unfortunately, I'm trained and I'm required to make sure that you don't cross
like
certain lines on the radio. I have to make sure that we keep an FCC license here.
But it's a fair point by Rick. Like, if he were to say something, you know, that's below board, which he's known to say. You're like an assassin. You all of a sudden you have like a sixth sense, like you know exactly what's going on. But takes that he throws out over 30, 40, 50 seconds of takes, you have no idea that he said it, and that is now your own take later on during the course of the day.
See, now I've lost you as well. Listen. Like I said, maybe this is something I have to like train my ears better for, because unfortunately there have been incidents in the past, and it's not like the legendary one that you were talking about earlier this week, where something may have slipped past here that I got chastised for, and I'm now trained to watch out for those things. And maybe certain things involve very hosts on this station or very hosts on this very show.
He saved me one night, I'll tell you that.
So unfortunately, I'm required to do those things. You can't hold me for the same standard for every single thing that you guys say, though.
He's a dump ninja now.
Yeah, he is. I don't think we're looking. Just don't steal our stuff, or at least say, "Hey, Rick had a great point."
Listen, if I had actually paid attention and had heard that say that was Rick's point, I would have properly credited at HDumpty39.
But I love the fact, hey, Anthony, I had a great idea.
and that's not what it was touted off. We were just bouncing things off in the studio, and I just tweeted it as we were saying it. So no, it wasn't intentionally pirated. It may have been involuntarily pirated.
This is what happens, though. This is what happens.
You're going to be the first pirate.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
This is what happens, though, Santi. You spend too much time. I'm telling you. Now they'll have you booking our guests on their show next.
That's right. That's RJ Bell coming your way at 10 o'clock and noon today on 98.7 ESPN.
Ain't that
even realize
happening?
That's what happens.
That's
exactly
what
right.
That's what's already happening. So, I mean, what are we going to say? Started with Buster Olney, and now it just seems like it's a regular occurrence.
Yeah, they take who they want. They take the takes they want. They take the guests they want.
As far as guests go, we're the organ donors for the Bart and Hahn show.
Yeah, we wake up in a bathtub full of ice. Where'd that kidney go? Oh,
my
Bart and
kidney's
Hahn's
gone. Yeah, Bart's juggling it at 11:30 this morning. That's where my kidney went.
Don't worry, Greeny. I got an extra kidney if you need it.
Yeah.
On Get Up.
No,
oh, man. Goodness.
All right, but you start 1-0, so you got to be happy about that this week.
Yeah, I'm happy. I mean, how could you not be?
Should
be. Just had a feeling about the game.
I had a same feeling, and then I'm watching the game. I'm like, you know what? He's not going to win this game because they got the ball back down by two. And I'm like, he's going to lose on that extra point. And then you get the safety and then the field goal, and then I don't know what they're doing on that last drive. They're moving so beautifully downfield. 8 yards, 9 yards, 8 yards, 7 yards, and then they shot when they get to the 20-yard line. But it's a win.
Andy Isabella's got to come up with that catch, though. Kyler Murray put it on him. He put it on him. Those two Seahawks defenders didn't touch that ball. You got to make that catch on that corner route. But that game was doomed the moment that the tight end didn't turn around for the tight end screen. Kyler Murray gets the intentional grounding.
Yeah.
And then J.R. Sweezy gets the holding penalty on L.J. Collier while Murray's in the end zone.
Which was a clear holding.
It was clear. It was clear. And I was thinking to myself as that was happening, that's the one thing that you can't do in that situation. And they got the ball out quick, and I'm just sitting there, how the hell does the guy get a holding penalty and Kyler Murray throws it in less than 3 seconds? I couldn't believe it. But that's just how bad J.R. Sweezy is playing. I don't know, man. Maybe he's still in his mind, thinks he's on the Seahawks. Maybe that's what it is.
Kyler Murray wasn't right, though, either.
He got beat up early in that game.
Like, they were getting to him. For some reason, Seattle decided they wanted to have a pass rush. Like, you could tell, like, he was throwing the ball on the sideline, and he was kind of grimacing.
He wasn't right.
So.
No, and he really didn't run the ball much.
Mm-mm.
It was not a good start for me, though. I'm sitting there watching the game. First play, sack. I'm like, oh, no, here we go.
They scored a touchdown on the drive.
No, I know, but he got sacked. I mean, immediately got sacked for a 6-yard loss. I was like, oh, here we go. Bad pick. I knew it Thursday night.
One, so the first play sacked. The second play, I think he completes to Disley, and then it's a first down to Carlos Hyde. The one play sack, and you're like, oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
You really are a Knicks fan.
This is how up and down I am, man. I told you, this ruins my weekend. Making picks ruins my weekend.
But the fact that the game is lost on the first play for you is unbelievable.
Listen, I'm not saying it's right. That's just how I feel. I'm trying to be an open book here. That's how I feel. I get
you
emotional.
You must be an emotional roller coaster on Sundays.
No, I'm the worst. The worst. That's why I told Cassie this. This is why I like Thursday night when I make bets on Thursday night or Sunday night or Monday night is because usually I can't stay awake for the entire game. So I'll watch the first half and then the second half, the following day on DVR. So I don't have like it's I can just wake up in the morning, see if I won or lost, and then, you know, I already know the answer when I'm watching it, so I'm not as nervous. You know what I'm saying?
No, I do. The thing with me, and I got to get over this, and I can't. I pick Thursday. I lose. I'm now wrecked for days. Now just ruined until Sunday.
Yeah, but you can't make. I mean, scared money don't make money. I mean,
true
if you have a feeling, you got to go with your feeling.
And I loved Seattle last night, and I couldn't take him because I'm weak.
Last night was a dicey proposition, though. Like, it's
real
just
dicey,
man. I mean, the ball is just beating up DK Metcalf. One time it hits him in the face when he's in the end zone.
That's unbelievable.
Like, I was just like, man. I mean, but you know what? Seattle got the breaks in the game that they needed. You know, I just that's ultimately what it came down to. And the plays that we're used to seeing Kyler Murray make off schedule, for whatever reason, they just weren't there last night.
And typically you watch games at whatever the name of the field is, CenturyLink or Lumen or whatever, and you're used to false starts because it's such an insane atmosphere.
Yeah.
I got false starts. They're missing false starts left and right. There's nobody there to watch.
Oh, yeah, guys are standing up and pointing. Like, there was one time the Seahawks defense was standing up and pointing because the guy from Arizona was jumping off sides.
It was, I mean, like, Joe Buck is like, wait a minute, I'm pretty sure he's offsides. They go to the replay.
Didn't Justin Colson have two on one series?
Yeah. I cannot believe, first of all, I can't believe the officials missed this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you have like nine of them out there. How do you all miss that?
They got the best seat in the house, Dave. Just when you thought there weren't fans in the building. They are fans. They just got on the officiating uniforms.
I don't know.
I'll take it.
But
I'll
listen, last night was a game that they had to win. The Seahawks had to win that game.
Yeah, you can't
lose. Like, if they wanted to try to win the division, you had to win that game. You could not lose four out of your last five, and then that includes two losses to the Arizona Cardinals.
Right, because then you'd be a game back having lost both to Arizona.
Yeah, so you don't control your own fate in terms of being able to win the division.
No, now you're in a heap of trouble, but now you're okay.
But that's why Rick took the game, because he knew that that was as close to a must-win as a championship-contending team could have in November.
But I'm sure when the great Jason Myers missed that extra point, he was at 3:47 this morning, just beside himself.
Yeah, see, it's all these variables. That's what's making these games
so
hard to
pick. Well,
Jets
are going to Jets, Dave.
Yeah,
even
if
they're in different uniforms.
No, but seriously, I mean, that's what's making these games so hard to pick this season, with all the different variables. I mean, you look at some of these games, too. Like, we pick them on Friday, and I got, you know, games I like. I got a handful of guys on the COVID list, not knowing whether or not they're going to play on Sunday. I mean,
that Vegas game, huh?
Yeah, I like that Vegas game. I actually like Tennessee for a second because it feels like a lot of points. But then I realized that Tennessee's special teams is horrendous.
Yeah, I wouldn't do
that. So I got to try to factor that into it.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's too much going on, Dave. And then I got Ray Santiago, my buddy, stealing takes.
He's not your buddy.
Ray Santiago's been here since the start.
Why would you say something like that, Dave?
Well, he's my guy.
A buddy wouldn't steal a take like that.
Come on, man. It's not an.
I think he's being
it's
influenced.
Not an earth-shattering take, Dave.
I think he's being influenced. How dare you talk about my take like that?
I'm just saying.
Doing rhymes and everything.
Rhymes and everything. But I
love. Next thing you know, Rick is going to be in the booth with Peter Rosenberg.
Anthony Pusick and I had a brilliant collaboration.
That's what made it the best.
Yeah,
it just hit me.
It just occurred to me. I mean, granted, I heard it 4 hours ago, but it just occurred to me. Brilliant take, sensational take. All right,
it's not your fault.
I don't like it, Santi. I don't like what's happening right now.
Like I said, in it's my a fucking concerto now.
I don't like it.
And my father would make outlandish statements like he created the question mark.
All right, let's come up with some interesting things to say today so Santi can use them as the day progresses. Guys, the Knicks are, I mean, I don't even know if they have enough guys to field the roster right now. They got rid of everybody yesterday, Chris. I mean, guys you heard of, guys you haven't heard of, they are looking for bodies moving forward. And you know what the nice thing is? They have a ton of money to do so.
Like Clyde would say, the Knicks are wheeling and dealing right now. I mean, they're clearing cap space. Clearly, they have an objective. There's somebody that they're targeting in free agency. I think the Gordon Hayward opportunity is interesting, although I don't think that would be my first choice if I was Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau. But, I mean, they're going to have options. And we knew that when they used this cap space to sign all these guys a couple of summers ago, like this was the reason why they did it. They wanted to maintain maximum flexibility with their salary cap. And now with the young talent that you do have, you're trying to look for the veteran pieces that you want to put in place in order to develop that talent, but also in order to be much more competitive and try to win some games. So I like where the Knicks are at right now. There's nothing that they've done that would signal to me that you know, there's anything bad going on. I think it's all positive. I even like the move that they made with the Utah Jazz yesterday in trading for Ed Davis's contract and being able to bring over two second-round draft picks in 2023. So, I mean, I like the fact that they're doing that and they're not being short-sighted. They realize, you know what, we're going to make this move because we don't want to waste our roster spots. We want to make sure that we can bring in guys that can contribute to this team this year. And I like it, Dave. I think it's all positive. If you're a Knicks fan, you got to feel good about the direction that they're heading in with their offseason plan.
Yeah, I mean, you got this cap space. I mean, unfortunately, you have to get rid of, you know, the second most famous Theo, instead of Theo Huxtable. But, I mean, this now you have the opportunity to – you can use that cap space, take on a bad contract, and, you know, bring assets in, which they did in the Davis deal. Or you want to go out and – I still think Westbrook – I still am intrigued by Westbrook. But, I mean, I just feel like the biggest need for the New York Knicks right now, and I know Canty likes Fred VanVleet, they need a point guard.
Yeah, but it's priority number one. But it sounds like Van Vliet's going to wind up back with Toronto.
Which I don't understand. Like, if you're the Knicks, why would you put it out there like we don't want to be used by Fred VanVleet to drive up the price for the Toronto Raptors? Like, if you like the player, then go after the player. You're going to have to spend money. You're the New York Knicks. How many games they win last year? They were awful. So you're going to have to pay more than other teams around the league. That's just what it is. But it's a position of need, and it's a player that you feel like would fit that need and could be a part of what you're doing with this young club. So I don't understand that. If I was the Knicks, I would try to be aggressive. I'm not saying give Fred VanVleet a max contract. But, I mean, if Fred VanVleet, you know, if he wants to cash in, why not cash in at Madison Square Garden and be a part of what you're trying to do here? That's the part I don't get. Now, if you're VanVleet, I understand it. Like, you'd rather be in Toronto with the Raptors, a team that can compete, rather than the Knicks, but he already let it be known he's trying to cash out. So if you're the Knicks, just go ahead and offer him more than anybody else would.
Yeah, you don't have to play the game. Don't dance around and say if he does this or if he does that. Just make the offer. If he takes it, he takes it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. I'd prefer him. I don't know how I feel about Gordon Hayward. Like, I'm intrigued by him, but I could see getting into that deal, much like the Westbrook deal, and being like, oh, we have 2 more years of
– That's,
a,
short
term,
money,
that's a short-term
that's
a, deal.
Yeah, it's a shorter-term deal.
That's like a 2-year deal with a club option for a third. Like, that's
if you give me that, I would do it.
Yeah, that's not a
long-term
deal.
2 years option for third. He's a good player. You know he's going to score points. I mean, health is obviously a concern with him.
Well, I mean, you can connect him to the Knicks, too. I mean, Walt Perrin drafted him, so he knows the player. I mean, the guy can shoot, and that's what – I mean, you need shooters.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy can shoot, but he looked terrible in the postseason. He dealt with 3 injuries last year. He had the foot, he had the broken hand, and he had a nerve issue. So I just I don't know, man. Like, I feel like he's damaged goods, and order a shorter-term contract, I think you mitigate the risk with that. But I don't know. Like, I don't know that Gordon Hayward is the priority when free agency starts today.
Point guard is a priority. It has to be. They need a point guard.
Yeah,
the point guard has to be the priority. Has to be.
Now,
it has to be.
Not on that level, guys, but I want to throw out a name. You tell me if you're interested at all in this guy. And we're having the Knicks conversation now, 800-919-3776 for you to get involved. Is someone like a Jeff Teague, does it do anything for you?
Not at all. Not even a little bit. I'm all set on Jeff Teague, Chris Dunn. I don't want any
DJ Augustine, that ilk of point guard.
Yeah,
So that it has to be who for you? It has to be Westbrook or VanVleet?
Yeah, I'm on that train. If it's not VanVleet, then go after Westbrook. But you're not going to let it. Here's the one thing that bothers me with the Westbrook situation. It's that it's a whole lot of money. Yes, that's an issue. But also that the Rockets want assets in return for that contract. I'm not giving up any assets in return for that. Like, I mean, if you're the Knicks, you're doing the Rockets a favor. You're doing them a solid. Why would you send them back assets?
No, you're not.
There's not a whole bunch of people that want that 3 years, $132 million contract for Russell Westbrook.
That's a lot of money. Not a whole lot of teams that can take that onto their books.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you slow play it and then wait till it gets to the point where
you
want to
try to smoke
them
out. You smoke them out. Yeah.
And I mean, especially because, if James Harden is hell-bent on not being in Houston, and maybe it's not Brooklyn, maybe it ends up being the Sixers, then, I mean, you're going to get a haul in return for Harden. And at that point, I mean, just getting rid of Westbrook's money, maybe just what you want to do.
Yeah, I think they don't have a choice, Rick. If they trade one of them, they might as well trade both of them because they're not competing for a championship.
No, I agree with you. And they already got rid of Covington. I mean, it feels like they're ready. They're ready to kind of
They're ready to rebuild the house and move on.
You know what it is, though, Rick? They just don't want to get their teeth kicked in on a deal. That's what it is. They don't want to get pennies on the dollar for either Harden or Westbrook. But I mean, when a star player in the NBA says he doesn't want to be there, what choice do you really have if you're the owner?
And it's not like you're going to have eight teams knocking down the door to bring that salary in.
No.
Just unloading the salaries is a win.
Well, there's only so many teams that have the cap space. Yeah, there's only so many teams that have the cap space.
Right.
I don't think either one of them finished the season with the Rockets.
No.
Yeah.
No, especially, I mean, and I love what the Sixers are doing. I mean, bringing in shooting. I wouldn't be surprised if Harden ends up
with Philly,
with the Sixers.
That deal makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, you pair him with Embiid.
You get Ben Simmons. You get Ben Simmons in return, like a foundational piece that you can build
value.
Around.
Yeah.
At least you can sell that to your fan base.
Yeah. At least you got hope, right? If you're the Rockets, you're not starting from zero.
Well, you're getting younger, too.
You get younger. I mean, he still has to work on his shot. The guy still can't shoot, but he's a perennial all-star.
I just feel like whatever team James Harden comes to in the East, whether it's Brooklyn or the Sixers, that's going to be the favorite.
I really want to see him in Brooklyn, though, just for our purposes.
It'll be spectacular. We don't know if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. It'll be something, though.
Yeah, but don't you feel like even with, people are so hesitant on the Westbrook thing. You can still build this thing the right way and win at the same time with Westbrook.
If you're the Knicks, you're saying?
Yeah, if you're not giving away assets, I think it's more benefit. Like, how many young players can you have? Right now, you got three you really like, right? You don't think it's more beneficial for them to win as they develop?
I agree with that.
Don't bring a bunch of old guys in that are going to take playing time.
No.
No, give them the opportunity. Russell Westbrook, just the way he competes, if that rubs off on R.J. Barrett and Obi Toppin and Mitchell Robinson, that's money well spent. If they have the same experience that Victor Oladipo had with Russell Westbrook, then that's worth whatever you're paying Russell Westbrook.
I guess my only question with that would be, is Russell Westbrook willing to be an extension of Tom Thibodeau and what he wants to do in terms of program building? You know what I'm saying? And overall basketball philosophy.
If he agrees to that, I would be all set with taking. I would want Russell.
Yeah,
Westbrook.
Here's the thing. I'm not necessarily all the way out on Russell Westbrook because I'm with you guys. You have to have a point guard. You can't come out of this situation, whether it's free agency or making a move, without a point guard. You have to find that guy. Like personally, I think Van Vliet would be my number one choice. But, I mean, if you have no other options, if you don't have anything better than Jeff Teague, DJ Augustine, or Chris Dunn, then hell yeah, let's roll the dice on Russell Westbrook.
But knowing that
contract, you're probably not going to like that in 3 years. It's just what it is.
Look.
Yeah, but hopefully, Chris, at that point, the young guys that you like.
R.J. Barrett got to come along. Mitchell Robinson got to come along. Yeah,
exactly right.
Yeah, they got to be at the point. R.J. Barrett needs to be at the point where he's knocking on the door to be an all-star, and Mitchell Robinson has to be that guy that's in the conversation for defensive player of the year. That's what you want.
So now when you start to, like, now when we're moving away from Russell Westbrook because he's past it, our young guys have stepped up, and now they're the focal point of the team.
Correct.
And you can say what you want about Russell Westbrook. I mean, he had, before he got hurt, I mean, he was having one of his best offensive seasons of his career. I mean, still, would you like him to shoot better? Well, of course you'd like him to shoot better. But, I mean, look at OKC when Kevin Durant left.
Yeah, the guy was a triple-double machine.
Well, yeah, but they're still winning. I mean, in the West, he's still winning. I mean, 16-17, they still win 47 games with not a ton of help in the West.
Look, my point is, in 3 years, when you're paying him $47 million, you're going to look at that and be like, ugh, this is an albatross right now.
Yeah, but who else are you paying, though?
Well, at that time, I don't know. That's my point. My flexibility goes away.
Well, what do you mean? But at that point, you're hoping that R.J. Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Obi Toppin, quickly, whoever else you draft, because you're not giving away your draft picks, to bring in Russell Westbrook, have developed to the point where, I mean, they're young guys not making a ton of money, and they're the ones that are carrying your team. I mean, let's not pretend like, I mean, we're still, everyone's plan is, well, maintain your flexibility because fingers crossed, one of these superstars just decides on a whim that they don't like their situation and they, for some reason, want to come be a New York Knick.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a track record of that happening. No, there's no track record of that happening. But let me moment, no one wants to be a Knick, unfortunately.
Let me ask you this question, Rick. How does Russell Westbrook react when all of a sudden he's not on a 48-win team, he's on a 35, 36, 37-win team?
This is probably – most people would look at this as a negative, but in this situation I would look at it as a positive. I don't necessarily know how focused Russell Westbrook is on winning. As opposed to personal success. I don't know how much he prioritizes winning as opposed to being the alpha male.
Is that what you want on young, impressionable players?
Exactly.
If he plays
as hard as he plays, then yeah, I'll take it.
Sure, he plays as hard as he plays, but he doesn't play in order for the team to have success at the highest level or the team to succeed. It's about him getting his numbers. That's the part, it comes back to the conversation about Tom Thibodeau and what he's trying to build and Russell Westbrook buying into that fully. If you have that conversation and he's all on board and he's willing to sacrifice some of the individual success for what they're trying to build, then I think it's a perfect fit. But if he's still going to be the Brody and it's all about, okay, I need the ball, I need my touches, I need my shots, I need my numbers, is that the tone you want to set with the younger players? Because when you're a young guy coming into this league and you got a former MVP on your team, you're going to be impressionable. Now, you're going to look at what he does and you're like, you know what? That's how you have success. And is that really what you want? I don't know. But that's something that the Knicks are going to have to discuss, and that has to be a conversation between the player and the organization, in particular the coach.
Yeah, I just think naturally, though, with it, I mean, if he plays up to his capabilities – I mean, regardless of why he's incentivized to play like that, it's going to equate to the guys around him being better and the team actually winning basketball games.
You'll be a better team.
Yeah. I guess my only question was how is he going to react knowing that he's going to do a lot more losing here than he's ever done in his career? Because he's a mercurial personality.
Yeah, but maybe he's in the mindset that it doesn't matter who's around him. He thinks he's good enough where he can lift them up.
Sure,
and win,
no,
win
I know what he
games.
Thinks. I'm just asking what happens when that's not the case.
I don't know that we know what happens. I think that's part of the roll of the dice of bringing him in here.
Yeah, that's part of that's the part of the risk that you take on.
Right. So, I mean, he's an immensely talented guy. He could lead you to wins that you ordinarily would never get. He's going to make a boatload of money, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get with the young players.
Listen, if you add Russell Westbrook, you're a 30 to 40 win team. I think it's somewhere in there. That's the range of what you are. And you're probably going to be a 7 or an 8 seed in the Eastern Conference, which has value when you start talking about young players getting experience, especially in the second season. But I just, in terms of what direction the organization wants to go and how Thibodeau wants to build it, I don't know if that's necessarily a fit. That's why I always said that Fred VanVleet would probably be my first choice. Because I've seen him in a situation where you have a lot of young players and you have a couple of stars and they're competing at the highest level. They won a championship a couple of years ago. And he hit a lot of big shots. He made a lot of big plays.
Oh, he's a winner. Absolutely, he's a winner. Jets Chargers. We'll get to that in a couple of moments. Of course, the game that you'll be glued to it at 4:15. You can listen to it as well on 98.7 ESPN. Is this the week, Rick, that your Jets get the victory?
I hope not.
If Jacksonville wins a game, another game, do you then root for the Jets to win a game? You do.
Yeah, then I would rather not be. Actually, no. You know what?
You don't want to go winless.
I do want him to go winless just because I want Adam Gase to wear all of this down.
Well, you do. But you're not a Jets fan.
All of this.
But you would never want the Giants to go winless, Chris.
No, I would never want the Giants to go winless. But in all fairness, I would never want the Giants to hire Adam Gase either. Especially after he failed in 3 miserable years in Miami. I just thought that was absolutely ridiculous, man. The current state of affairs with the Jets all goes back to that decision. Because you could have hired Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule wanted the job. It was all but done, and then you tried to pawn off Greg Williams on his coaching staff. Who does that? Bad teams do that.
And what could this win to if it's Joe Flacco, by the way? Stop, please.
Well, I mean, what's the difference? Darnold's not going to be here.
Oh, maybe Darnold winning a game actually increases trade value as opposed to Joe Flacco, which does nothing.
I don't know. I don't know that you see Darnold again. To be honest,
that's what I was going to ask you. There, I don't know that he plays. Like, if he misses another week after this one, why would you even play him?
I would not be at all surprised if he's done.
Just shut him down.
What's the point?
I'm with you. I really don't think with this cast of characters, there's anything that he can do to increase his trade value.
I mean, you want him to come back against Miami, a defense that looks like that?
No.
Where he gets hammered?
No.
Gets re-injured, then needs surgery? No. I'd shut him down.
No.
Shut him down.
I don't want to see that. I have no interest in watching Joe.
You know, Jets are still heavily favored to not go winless.
It's not easy to go winless.
So they're anticipating that win comes this week.
I don't know about that.
Well, do you know the remainder of their schedule?
Well, I know they have Miami.
They got Miami after that. Then they got Vegas. Then they got Seattle. Then they got the Rams. Both of those are on the road. Home against Cleveland, and then on the road against New England. So where's the win if it ain't this weekend?
I mean, you couldn't see winning in New the New England game if they have nothing to play for also? Look, I don't know where the win is coming from. I'm just saying that in Vegas, the odds are distinctly in the advantage that the Jets will win at least one game.
Okay.
All right. That's all I'm saying. Let's get to some of these next calls.
And Chris is saying he doesn't agree with you.
He's saying he doesn't agree with Vegas.
Or you. Because for some reason I feel like you're agreeing with Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. No, he does feel like that, doesn't it, Rico?
I'm the middleman. I'm bringing the information for you guys to dissect and analyze. That's the point guard genius of me.
Well, unfortunately for the Jets, Vegas and whoever's betting on these games doesn't feel like the Jets have a chance. The number's gone up to 9.5 now.
Mm-hmm. It was 8.5 yesterday.
Ooh, Myles Garrett placed on the reserve COVID list. That's not good news for the Giants.
No.
Because a Giants fan is a Browns fan this week.
Well, you bet. I mean, it's similar. Eagles. Over the last couple of years, Browns have been a better team than you. Really?
Yeah, I don't know why that was a necessary shot you had to take, though.
Well, I mean, Cleveland used to be the laughing stock of the NFL.
Yeah, and who do you think is now?
The Jets.
All right. Marlo and Elmont. Oh, listen, Marlo.
Like, don't pretend like you're not close behind. Stop.
Well, no, you know what? I don't think we are close behind.
Yeah, lucky you.
I don't think we got the
O-line coach fighting the head coach.
We're not close behind you. You got to take the elevator up like 45 floors to get where we are. And we're close to the bottom, but this is
productive losing, baby. This is losing with a purpose.
Better hope. All right, Marlo, I'm sorry. You're on 98.7.
Oh, girl, what's going on, fellas? Man, I just want to make a comment on Fred VanVleet. You guys said Canty said to pay him whatever he wants. And I just want to be fair here because the Knicks get tossed around a lot. So if we max out Fred VanVleet.
I didn't say – see, there you go, putting words in my mouth. Did I say max out Fred VanVleet, or did I clearly say don't give him a max contract? No. See, that's the thing, man. I don't understand this. You want to frame it however you want to frame it. Damn it, if you're going to quote me correctly. I said you're competitive. You're probably going to have to pay him more than anybody else. But I said do not give VanVleet a max contract. I said that.
But Canty, that's you can't say those two different things.
I said don't give the man a max contract because I don't think he's a max contract player. Why be locked into a max with a guy that's not a max contract talent?
More than anybody else, he's probably going to be max. He's looking to back up the Brinstrup.
But I don't know. Here's the thing. I said we don't know that that's the case. We don't know what the market's going to be, although we think he is one of the most coveted free agents that's going to be out there. What I was saying was it's going to cost you more if you're the Knicks than your Raptors. If you want Fred VanVleet, it's going to cost you more money. If the offers are the same, if you're Fred VanVleet, why the hell would you come to New York?
If we pay him that, right, and then he doesn't pan out, and he's like, okay, then we're going to say the Knicks negotiated against themselves, and then we're going to be clowning the Knicks in the front office, and the Knicks could never get it right.
You need a point guard. You have to have a point guard. You don't have a lot of options. You got Fred VanVleet, or it's trade for Russell Westbrook. Either way, it's a hell of a lot of money for that spot. But those are your choices. Do you want Chris Dunn? Do you want Jeff Teague? You want DJ Augustine? Please tell me.
You cannot reach, Chris.
You want Elfrid Payton back? You want Elfrid Payton back? You want to run that back?
I'm glad he's gone, but you cannot overreach for a guy just based on need. You can't do that. How good is Fred VanVleet, an all-star level point guard in the NBA? Is he going to help?
We don't know. I don't think he is, but we don't know. I mean, he averaged 17 points a game last year, and he was a backseat to Kyle Lowry. So we don't know the full potential of Fred VanVleet. Now, is Fred VanVleet Russell Westbrook? No. But Russell Westbrook is 32 years old, and that comes with a contract of 3 years, $132 million. All I'm saying is this. If you're the Knicks, you have to have a point guard. You need somebody to give structure to your offense, to orchestrate this thing, to get the ball to your young players in their spots where they can do what they do best. You're trying to develop R.J. Barrett, Obi Toppin, and Mitchell Robinson. That's hard to do without a real point guard.
Let me say one more thing. Russell Westbrook, I heard he's the three years left on his contract, the albatross of the contract. Russell Westbrook is an elite athlete. He's cut from that Adrian Peterson, LeBron James cloth of DNA, where their bodies are just phenomenal, and his physicality is phenomenal. It's a three-year deal. The last year will be an expiring contract. So getting that, the contract and the money is not the problem. The problem with Russ is just...
You're saying the contract and the money is not the problem, and the rest of the league is saying the contract and the money is the problem.
It's not the problem with Russ, not for the Knicks.
It's not me that's saying it's the rest of the damn NBA. If it wasn't a problem, Russell Westbrook would have been traded by now. They've already come out and said they don't want to play with each other. James Harden and Russell Westbrook do not want to play with each other, even though they're friends.
The Rockets want a haul for Russell. That's the only problem with the Knicks. They want a haul for Russ. We cannot give away all of our assets for Russ. We can't do that. If we could get him for a good deal, it works. But the rest of the league is not going to try to get him because of what the Rockets are asking for.
Okay. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. I'm just listening to Adrian Wojnarowski and Bobby Marks and all the other NBA insiders that ESPN employs. And they're saying that the Russell Westbrook contract is a problem for the Rockets to move. I don't know how you know better, but I'll bow out of this one.
It is a problem. Everybody knows it's a problem. $47 million the final year is a huge number.
No, it's a huge number, and I think what makes it harder, and I think to Chris's point, I understand what the caller's saying. It's under the circumstances, too, with, you know, what we've dealt with the pandemic, what the cap situation looks like and everything else. There are only a handful of teams that could absorb his money. So, I mean, if Houston wants to get rid of Russell Westbrook, there are only a handful of teams that can do it. So, I mean, at a certain point, if you're the New York Knicks and the price is right, I think it makes sense to do it.
But isn't the price going to have to be right? Like, there's no way Houston's going to be able to hold out for a huge haul here.
That's the point. But right now they're trying to play hardball. I mean, they're in no rush to do it. So, I mean, if you're the Knicks, you just stay patient, wait them out.
That's right. And that's the advantage the Knicks have right now.
Yeah.
With any deal.
The space, and now you have options.
That's right.
Decide what you want to do. If Fred VanVleet, if there's a contract you want to offer Fred VanVleet and he wants to take it, then that could be an option. If he decides he wants to stay in Toronto, then he stays in Toronto. And then you look elsewhere. But point guard is the number one priority right now.
Absolutely.
It has to be.
Everyone agrees with that. Lou and Manalapan. Lou, you're next up on 98.7. Lou.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going, fellas? Good morning. First things first, I want to apologize to Rick for saying that the Islanders were rebuilding the last time I called.
That was way off.
You guys are a legit contender until the Rangers take your place this year. But let's talk about the Knicks really quick. Let's talk about the Knicks. I love what we're doing. I love how we're building. The most important thing that the Knicks can do right now is going to get Westbrook. And then maybe signing Melo. I think that this team...
They're going to sign Melo.
Don't hang up. Listen, here's the thing. Westbrook could throw up the alley-oops to our boy Obi. He could throw up the alley-oops to Mitchell. And then you have Carmelo just standing in the corner. If those guys don't want to go to the rim, you pass it out, get a nice little three-point action from Melo. It's going to look good. Also, Westbrook could help quickly develop because he has kind of that similar game. He dribbles very well, and he could chuck up some threes. I love what they did getting Miles Powell. I love what they're doing.
Yeah, I think most people are impressed with what they're doing. One thing I do not want, and it sounds like it's going to happen, according to Ian Begley, they're going to bring Carmelo Anthony back here. And honestly, I don't know why.
But would you rather?
Why would he want to come back?
I guess he loves New York.
He's in a perfect situation
in Portland. Well, I don't understand why he would want to leave that situation.
Oh, I wouldn't want to leave the situation in Portland. But if the Knicks pay him and he could be in New York and kind of make, you know, a legendary status for himself.
Legendary status. Well, I mean, and thanks to the call, Lou. What kind of am I missing something, Chris? Legendary status? He's 36 on a team that's going to be lucky if they win 33 games this year.
Well, here's the thing, and I think this speaks to something that Rick always talks about, is every athlete wants a home. And Mel knows that Portland is not his home. OKC is not his home. Like, if he was going to have a home, it's probably going to have to be with New York. So to be able to come back.
Syracuse.
To
Syracuse,
be able to
New York.
Stop. Why would you be like that? I mean, if he came back, it would be on, like, what, an exception? It would be a low deal. You're talking about $5 to $7 million. Okay. If Carmelo Anthony comes back for that, I don't think it hinders the Knicks from making any moves that they need to make. The only question is, why, if you're Carmelo, would you want to come and be a part of something that's clearly a rebuild when you're on a team now that's going to be a playoff contender?
I have absolutely no idea.
The only thing that it could be is what Rick always talks about. Carmelo considers New York home, and New York's team is the Knicks.
But do you want to see Carmelo Anthony getting minutes, or do you want to see a guy who's 22?
Dave, you need shooting. You don't have no shooting. You need shooting, and Mel can shoot. You got to get shooters, especially if you bring on somebody like Russell Westbrook. You got to have shooters. Where's that going to come from?
I don't know. I'd much prefer bringing someone younger who's going to grow with this team.
Dave, I'm with you. You know I'm on the same page as you, Dave. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, from a basketball standpoint, that's the one thing that Mel could bring to this team. Plus the fact that he's taking the craft more seriously. He's working out, taking care of his body. Like, the guy that showed up in Portland, that's a different Carmelo than we saw with the Knicks the first time.
Yeah, he played well, but yeah. I guess he has no interest in trying to win a championship then, right? In the twilight.
Yeah, that
should be
sailed. That should be sailed. That's
the Michael K. Show's 20 and 20 contest continues today, 3 o'clock, right here on 98.7 ESPN. The K. Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game over the last 20 years, and all you have to do is recognize that person's voice. Now, make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little bit more enjoyable. Today, the guys are giving away a Frigidaire 38-bottle wine cooler. It's the 20 and 20 contest brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails on Demand, and, of course, the good folks, the great folks, really, here at 98.7 ESPN. You must have a wine fridge, Rick, I would imagine.
I do, yeah.
And you love it.
Fully stocked.
Yeah. How many bottles of wine does that thing hold for you?
I have no idea.
Over 50, you think? If you had to guess.
Yeah, probably over 50. Over 50, yeah.
You're a big wine guy.
I used to be a big wine guy. I haven't had a sip of it.
You'll get back there.
Months.
You will get back there. All right. So the question is, and we talked about this earlier, let's get back to it. Can the Jets win a game? Can the Jets win a game this week? And Chris, I love this part of the show. It's one of my favorites. I turn to you and I say, what do the Jets have to do to find themselves a victory in L.A. against the Chargers this week?
Well, the Jets got to take away Keenan Allen from Justin Herbert. You can see that that's his comfort zone, being able to get the ball to Keenan Allen whenever he's in trouble. If you take away that opportunity, I think Justin Herbert finds himself struggling a little bit. So I think that's the most important thing. But we also know that that's a hard thing for the Jets to do, because they give up a lot of yards in the air, and their pass defense has averaged over 100 quarterback rating for opposing teams. So that's going to be a problem for them. I think that's the biggest thing for the Jets. If they're going to have success, their secondary is going to have to be able to communicate. We know they got some moving parts on the back end. They got a guy going IR. They cut Pierre Desir. So this is going to be a challenge. No doubt about it. The Jets have to be prepared for the explosive plays that Chargers passing attack presents. And Dave, I'm just not sure if they have the personnel to be able to do that.
That's the biggest concern. I mean, right now, when you look at their secondary, it's a mess. And you're going up against a team, like Chris mentioned, that's one of the most – I mean, they're an explosive offense.
Oh, yeah.
I know they have a rookie quarterback, but you look at their offensive weapons between Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, you got Dave's favorite, Hunter Henry. I mean, this team can score points. I will say this about the Jets' offense. It did look better when you had all three of your wide receivers healthy. And if Joe Flacco, I mean, give him credit, he can still push the ball down the field. That's really going to have to be the focus. Establish the run, get Joe Flacco with some play action, and take shots down the field.
Yep. And can we see more Perine, please? I mean, I know Frank Gore is going to be a Hall of Fame running back, but do I need to see Frank Gore getting 10, 12, 14 carries a game? I need Perine to be the bell cow of this offense.
Dave, as long as he's running behind Mekhi Becton.
Yep.
Could be Frank Gore. It could be LaMichael Perine. I would like to see more of him too, but They got to establish that run. They have to.
They have to. A little play action, deep shots. Maybe this is the week. Maybe this is the week. It is Thanksgiving.
It is Thanksgiving. It would make the turkey taste a little bit better.
A little bit better. A little bit more succulent. A little gravy. Juicier. Delicious. Love the turkey.
Can't eat duck because he's bougie like that.
Nah, she nixed the duck idea. That's not happening.
Let's get a couple duck breasts.
She said no duck.
Easy peasy.
She said no duck, Rick.
Listen, all she got to do, get a couple duck breasts. You score the skin. Get the pan real hot.
You don't understand, Rico. You don't
understand.
You don't understand. I don't do any of the cooking. So if she says no duck, what's going to happen? I can buy the duck breast. You know what's going to happen? They're going to sit in the freezer.
I promise this. You buy the duck breast, you go. You could Chris Candy, buy yourself, cook that duck breast.
I don't believe that.
I'm telling you.
I don't believe that. You have misplaced confidence in your co-host.
Yeah, I'm on Chris's side. If he knows that his limitations, he knows he can't do it, he can't do it.
I'm here to empower, Dave.
Not everybody's Julia Child in the kitchen. Rick.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible.
If he says you're he can, he can. A man that can.
Did you think I thought I could take apart and dismantle the microwave and put a new one? Of course, I didn't think I could
dismantle,
do it.
What do you mean dismantle?
It was all built in. I had to take things. I'm taking things out, putting things in. I'm whittling
So you
wood.
Popped the microwave out that was no, in, and you put the new microwave anything. In that was out.
No, I didn't pop
it. You made that process sound a lot simpler than I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it was not easy. I couldn't do it. No, but you seem to be more capable than I am, and then Chris might be.
All I'm saying is I could walk Chris through it. I am confident, as bad as he thinks he is in the kitchen, that if we work together, he could cook a beautiful duck breast.
Maybe it's just not worth it to him.
A beautiful duck breast is delicious.
But maybe he's fine with turkey and whatever she's going to make.
Well, he's fine because that's his option right now.
Exactly.
You're only as good as your options.
Exactly.
All right, we have a good option, a beautiful option, the great option of Andy in Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR.
Oh.
39, are you there?
Oh, I'm here, baby.
I have a question. Why is Santiago asking if I want out of Dave's basement and a plush room in Alan Hahn's house?
This is what he's doing.
What's with the poaching?
he's a double agent, man. He's a double agent right now.
Two clown pirates.
All right. You guys were just talking about the Jets' trip to the Chargers. I got a four-pack of Charger questions for you. Starting with, the Chargers organization have retired four uniform numbers. Name them, please.
Dan Fouts.
One.
Lance Allworth.
Two. Sayo.
Tomlinson.
And Sayo.
Four for four. Look at you boys. All right. Speaking of Mr. Tomlinson, he, of course, holds the team record for rushing touchdowns at 138. Who ranks number two?
How old is this player?
Early 80s.
Chuck Muncy?
Chuck Muncy is correct.
Nice, Dave.
Nicely done, David. All right, this is a more recent question. Three times in Chargers history has a Charger player recorded 100 more catches in a season. Twice done by Keenan Allen. Who's the third Charger to do so?
I know who I want to say. Let's.
I would have said Kellen Winslow, but he said it's more recent.
Caught 100. Didn't LaDainian Tomlinson record a bunch of catches one year?
CC, my man.
Nice. What year was that, Andy?
2003, he had exactly 100 catches.
Yeah, I knew, yeah, okay.
Running back with 100 catches, huh? Yeah. Unbelievable. Yep.
And 99.
People forget how good LT was, man.
Yeah.
Oh, he was the best. He was a fantasy god. Now, CC, I know that kickers are not football players, but can you tell me what Notre Dame alum holds the Charger record with 261 made field goals? And yes, Dave, there's a little New York flavor here.
Come on, Dave. New York flavor.
Had a cup of coffee with the Giants.
Cup of coffee with the Giants.
I'm just thinking back to my Super Tecmo Bowl days. Who was the kicker on Super Tecmo Bowl for the Chargers?
John Carney.
That's who it was, Dave. That's it. That's it, Dave. Yep. There you go.
He was a good kicker.
Hey, big shout out to Mark Gastineau on his 64th birthday. Fellas, let's be careful out there. And as always, Stay healthy, boy. Oh,
beautiful. Beautiful, Andy. I mean, Rick,
that's a good one. That was a good one.
You were disappointed a couple times during the week. Not on a football Friday from Andy, no.
No, he comes strong. I expect nothing less.
Guys, Ralph Vacchiano, I'm seeing it from on Twitter. The Giants have announced that three more players have tested positive for COVID-19. Now, they are on their bye week, but those players have self-isolated, and the Giants have begun contact tracing. So just as things start to go well for the Giants and they win two in a row in the first time in forever, COVID kind of rips through the organization right now, Chris.
It's one of the things you worry about during the bye week too, though, Dave, right? Mm-hmm. Guys kind of scatter, going about, you know, whatever they want to do. They kind of relax for a second, and they're not thinking about taking all the precautions that they necessarily would if they were being reminded of it being in the building every single day. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, certainly not good news, and we know that looks like Myles Garrett might not play in this game for Cleveland on Sunday, which is not good news for the Giants. And listen, the next game is I mean, you could argue outside of the Dallas game, Week 17, Rick, the easiest game you have on the schedule coming up out of the bye, and that's Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, this is a negative because they're testing positive for COVID, but the positive signs, it could be worse. I mean,
well, at least you're in your bye week. Bye,
exactly right. It's just the way this thing is spreading currently. I mean, it's a matter of time before
it hits every team.
But I guess what would worry me, Rico, that it is a bye week. Like, guys are left to their own devices.
But they're still coming in every day to get tested. Listen, it's never, there's nothing good about it.
Sure.
I mean, if you do want to pull a positive from it, is these aren't guys.
You don't
aren't
have a game on Sunday. Yeah,
exactly.
I got you. Yeah, I got you. I'm with you.
Guys aren't missing
you.
The game. Because that's a huge loss. If Myles Garrett doesn't play in that game, I could
How can he play? I mean, if he's put on this list today, how can he possibly play on Sunday?
I don't think he can. So I think he's out for Sunday, which means
Philadelphia
has a legitimate chance to win that game now.
And the spread is down to 2.5 now. So
does this not feel like one of those spots where Philadelphia somehow finds a way to win?
I said that earlier this week.
They really
do. But Philly's got a bunch of guys on the list, too.
Yeah, but not key players, right?
But Vinny Curry's not a key player for them?
I don't think he's a great player.
Yeah.
He's not Myles Garrett, but still.
No, I don't think. Yeah, I mean.
They got a handful of guys. I mean,
they got Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham. I think they're still good at defensive end.
And they have a bunch of receivers.
And Josh
also.
Wett, so.
How about Fletcher Cox just having his arm pop right back in? You see that on the sideline?
He's a beast.
Didn't even miss a play.
He's unbelievable.
He didn't miss a play. All right. Speaking of missing, well, let's bring him in. The talented Las Vegas handicapper that is RJ Bell. Good morning, RJ. How are you?
Hey, guys. You know, your producer said, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but he says, you know, us having trouble getting a hold of you, it's kind of good for you. And I said, why? They go, well, if they hear this segment without you, it's like you're going to be very appreciated, the audience. I said, you know, I hear you.
You know what? I think there's a pretty good chance he did say that today after the way we beat him up to start the show. RJ, I mean, come on, man. Another loss from you last week.
Is that right?
You took San Francisco plus the points,
and they
did not cover.
You want to hear something amazing?
Well, here we go.
No, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it, RJ. I don't
really
want to hear it, no.
I want to hear it. I'd like to hear it.
We were undefeated in the Super Contest.
So I mean, that's pathetic. How are you going 5-0 in the Super Contest? You can't give us one winner.
One push.
All right, 4-0-1
still. The Browns, minus 3.
So when what's his face, Chubb stepped out of bounds, you had a heart attack, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I take it, you know, I don't sweat every game. And it's kind of funny because Mr. Michael Kay, he's come around. We had a very powerful discussion yesterday, his number one ranked show. And he kind of came around. I sent him a game by game, and I said, you know, I've hit 63% with you. He's like, you're right. And I go, in a way, your expectations being unreasonable is setting the expectation of all the young batters out there in New York City. He goes, I never thought of that. And we've kind of arrived. He's happy.
All right. Well, we're not. You're 2-8 on our show, and we expect better from you. Now, the credit I will give you is you and Chris were 0-8, but now you're 2-8, and you can feel the tide is turning in the way for you guys. Chris, your three games. RJ,
first off, what was Chris's record in his three?
Chris, I believe, went 2-1 last week.
Okay. I was hoping 1-2.
And then you picked the one. See, you're a bad guy. Why would you want
to be a bad guy,
yeah.
RJ?
No. I was just saying I'm very self-interested, so I wasn't trying to be negative to him. I was just really more focused on me.
And we've come to
And you were going to focus on you by highlighting how bad I've been throughout the course of this year.
No, I was hoping you're a bad guy. One winner out of the three, that's all.
Well, you had a winner. And the way you're going, take that. Chris, such a bad guy.
So, RJ, before I give you my three games, I wanted to ask you a question about the Jets-Chargers line. Yesterday it was at 8.5. Today it's at 9.5. And even though 60% of the tickets are on the Chargers, I see that 97% of the cash is on the Jets. So I wanted to ask you, how is that even possible that the line could move up a point in the Jets' favor and yet they're the ones that are getting all the cash?
Great question. So – it's kind of a complicated answer. You guys are familiar with teasers, correct?
Yeah.
So a 6-point two-team teaser is most typical. And there's something called an advantage teaser. And a lot of people play teasers. It's huge. So it's worth a second. Now, an advantage teaser means that you take it up through 3 and 7. So what lines would do that? 2.5, 2, or 1.5? So if you have plus, you know, 2.5, 2, or 1.5, you can go up to 8.5, 8, or 7.5, right? 6 points on top of it. Those are great because you think about it, you're going through 3, which is a very common outcome. You're going through 7. So you're buying points effectively with a teaser, and you're buying the most valuable points because you're buying 3 and 7. Okay. Now, the other way is to buy down from 8.5 to 2.5, 8 to 2, 7.5 to 1.5. You're then buying down through 7 and 3. What some places do, if they start getting action on the teaser being bought down, is they'll move the line to 9, even though it's not really warranted. But now, yeah, they're giving some plus 9 to people if they want the Jets, but they'd rather protect. It's called teaser protection. About the 9, and the 9 now only goes to 3, and it's not near as attractive because 3 is such a common number. So around 9, Chris, there's sometimes some funny line moves that don't really correlate to the action.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. All right, here are the three games, RJ.
I do like this game, so if you don't mind, real quick, I love the Jets here.
Ooh.
Love them.
Ooh.
And I'm going to say this. Here's my advice. I'm going to just make this simple. This is my pick of the week with you guys.
Hang on. Jets plus 9.
And number two, I'm going to advise the following. Put 1/3 of your bet on the money line. Jets to win straight up. 2/3 of your bet on the Jets plus, you know, the 9, 9.5, whatever you get. And here's the rationale. There's no time in the NFL that there's a team more focused, and let's say a losing team more focused, than when they're winless in the second half of the year off a bye. Because what happens? They're hanging out at the house, you know, they're listening to ESPN in New York, and they hear you guys just cutting on them, busting on them. They don't want to hear it. It's 2 weeks of that, and the bye is when they have a chance in theory to be focused, and, you know, everyone knows after buys, teams do better typically. And historically, if all you did was, say, week 7 or later, winless teams off a bye. That's it. You just play them blind. The record is outstanding. It's like 16-6 ATS. So, and they've won half the games. So think of this. The line in that game, those games, has been an average of 6 points. So they're 6-point underdogs on average, and they win half the time. It's almost inexplicable, and to me, it's all about motivation. Chris, I don't know. I don't think you were ever like an 0-7 or worse team, but
no.
Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. I guess, and here's the interesting part, because I actually liked that game, but I was on the other side of it. The Ooh. Question that I have to you is, how do you weight the Jets being historically bad? We've talked about the point differential before. How do you weigh that against the information that you had about winless teams coming off a bye in the second half of the season?
If you look at the last 4 weeks, so EPA, expected points added, which is a very respected metric, and you can look at it on a per-play basis, so it's a very flexible metric. In the last 4 weeks, in competitive situations, so what I do is, you know, they have expected win percentage after every play, right? 99. You hear when a team comes back when it's 99% or whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is I eliminate any time either of the teams is above 90%, because at that point the game's not competitive. And yeah, sometimes they're going to come back, but generally that's where you get the garbage yards and all that. So if you say last 4 weeks, but it's not over 90% for either team, so competitive, the Jets are actually number 24 right now in EPA. So, yeah, the Patriots game looked good, and I think that drives it. But listen, Patriots look mighty good the week after. I think you could make the case the Jets are not the worst team in the last month. And thus, the whole historically bad, I think, gets thrown out the window.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, RJ, here are the three games. So, I like the Cowboys getting 7, visiting the Vikings. I like the Buccaneers laying 4 at home against the Rams on Monday night. And the Jets-Chargers game, I like the Chargers. So, we're just going to throw that one out because you like the Jets.
Yeah.
So, what are the games that you like?
So, by the way, last thing on that Jets game, the reason I say a little on the money line, let's say that it is a close game late. Can you imagine how tight the Chargers are? Historically bad in close games, and now the Jets might get their first win against you. I mean, at that point, you got to like the money line. So that's my rationale there. Okay, so I don't like the Cowboys.
Okay.
And the reason is, to me, back to EPA the last 4 weeks, the best team in the NFL, and it's really not even close, is the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, the distance, KC's number 2, the distance between number 1 Minnesota over that time and KC is the same distance that KC has over the number 6 team. So, literally, it's a pretty big margin. Minnesota's playing that well. And if you think about it, on Monday, everything was against them, right? I mean, this is a Chicago home field that does very well against Minnesota. Cousins 0-9, as you guys probably know, on Monday night, straight up and against the spread. And still somehow Minnesota covered that game. We saw the Rams, their great year, go in there and get dismantled. It's hard to win in Chicago. We just saw Tampa Bay go in there and not do it. And Minnesota was able to. And you know, let's be honest, is the Cowboys really excited about Andy Dalton at this point? I mean, one minute he's got COVID, next minute his head hurts, the team doesn't defend him. I'm not sure if he's that much better than Gilbert, at least the way it feels like his season's going, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have better expectations. So amongst the games, I would say Tampa's my game. And
good.
The reason I lean that way in Monday night is because of Whitworth. The thing about the Rams, they are a top-heavy team. Right? You know, Donald, you've got Ramsey. Those are two elite players. Maybe the best, or, you know, I think with Ramsey, maybe the best at his position. With Donald, he is, right? And then they're kind of thin, right? I'm not saying just the third guy's no good. I'm just saying in general they're a thin team. Well, Whitworth was a top tackle, maybe the best left tackle in the league this year, but let's say top 5 for sure. You get rid of him, the market doesn't react to it too much, right? Oh, left tackle, he's old. But I think it's a huge loss. Now, again, you understand O-line play. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a different offensive line. That's a different offense without Whitworth, and we've seen that in past years.
Yeah, and to me, the first game is going to be the toughest. Because even though the left tackle comes in won't be as near as good, in 3 or 4 games they start to integrate in a little bit. That first game is the tough game. And by the way, what does Tampa do better than anyone on defense?
They get after it.
Exotic blitzes, too.
Yep.
So I think the inexperience really hurts at left tackle. I like the under more in this game. If I had one pick, it'd be under 48. But I do like Tampa.
RJ Bell with us and spitting knowledge today on 98.7 ESPN.
Yeah, he
is. This might be the best you've been, RJ. I feel like focused.
Dave, when I have bad luck hit me, I just try to work through it.
It feels like that's your mantra. All right. Chiefs Raiders. I was all about the Chiefs, and now I'm getting cold feet. But you've always said this, that the Chiefs are, you know, what's their motivation typically? And they're so much better than these other teams. Well, the motivation is they have one loss this year, and it's to this team. And if you lose this game, you're a game ahead of them, and they win the tiebreaker. Is that enough to make you like the Chiefs laying the 7.5 this week?
It's worth some points. And when I say points plural, that's big to me, because I think most things are worth a half point if they're worth anything, right? All the factors people talk about. And you see that in the NFL, right? The difference between like the 8th best team and the 24th best team is like 3 points. I mean, so there's not a, you know, the game of inches, as Pacino talked about, one of my reference points. And so here's the thing that makes me not like Kansas City. So let's think about the Raiders and their big wins. They had 2 really big wins. Saints, which you know, in hindsight, it looks like a big win because most people with Drew Brees think the Saints are the best team in the NFC right now. So, all right, and Kansas City. So you can make the case the Raiders have beat the best team in the NFC and the best team in the AFC. Who else can compete with that? So on one hand, you got to respect the Raiders. On the other hand, I think the Raiders have gotten a lot better in the last month. And air yards is a stat that is kind of starting to become more discussed. And the concept is simple. How far does the ball travel in the air? Because in this dink-and-dunk era with a lot of quarterbacks, and Drew Brees being a good example of that, you want to know, are they getting the ball downfield or not? Well, if you look at it, Carr was one of the worst at getting the ball downfield, right? That's supposedly why there was so much conflict with Gruden over the years, right? Well, if you look at the last three games, but you throw out the Cleveland game, because obviously Cleveland, there was 30-mile-an-hour wins in that game, if you remember, right? So we can't really even count that. In the other two games of the last three, is Carr has literally been number two in air yards that week and number four in the two other weeks. So he's been bottom. He's been 20s the whole year. So to me, there's something that's happened with Carr that he's now throwing downfield, and he's been mighty successful at it. So on one hand, I think the Raiders might be underrated because Carr's just a different quarterback right now. It could be a two-game aberration, but I don't know. And finally, the thing that makes me not want to play the Raiders, though, is both the motivation of that loss, Andy Reid talking about the victory lap, which Andy Reid doesn't say something like that off the cuff. He had a reason to say that. And finally, Andy Reid off a bye. And, you know, the numbers are so impressive. Sometimes people blend the playoffs with the regular season. If you actually just look at the regular season, the record is outstanding, and even ATS, it's strong. So I'm actually going to pull it up. Oh, here it is. So in the regular season, Andy Reid off a bye is 19-4, all right? And against the spread, 15-8. So listen, 19-4, Andy Reid's had some good teams, but they're not supposed to be 19-4. This is a guy that you give him extra time, he can trick you. Now, does that extra time, is it worth less in a division game when they know each other? My gut feeling is it is not worth as much. This, to me, is a fascinating handicap. I'm staying away.
R.J. Bell joins us here on the show. R.J., you mentioned the Saints. No Drew Brees. They're not sure yet. I mean, they won't announce it. It feels like Jameis Winston is going to be the quarterback. But is there value in taking the 4 points and in picking Atlanta in that game?
Now, here's the thing. If you think about that, what is the all team this year, let's say the top three of teams, the record stinks, but they're actually pretty good, right? I'd say it's Atlanta number one. I'd say Chargers number two, right? And number three is, I don't know, maybe New York Giants at this point? I mean, Giants have covered 6 or 7 games, by the way. I don't know if you know
that. They're right there. They're right there.
Pretty strong. But Atlanta, if you actually look at, again, expected points added the last month, and that's a good demarcator, I think, it's a quarter of a season looking back, is Atlanta's the sixth best team in the NFL. And if you look at those four games, they'd be undefeated if they had just kicked a 27-yard field goal. We can blame Gurley, but really I blame the coach. But the coach, Morris, is 3-1. So in general, if you look at the record, this line doesn't make any sense. If you look at how good the team's playing, it does. I believe the value's on the Falcons, and here's why. Drew Brees, because he doesn't have the arm talent that some of the best players have today, people dismiss it. And I said this time and time again. If you look at QBR, which is ESPN stat, and it's one I very much respect for quarterbacks, Drew Brees is the only quarterback, except for Patrick Mahomes, that had the last 2 years had been in the top 10. And Drew Brees, by the way, was number 2 1 year and 3 1 year. All right? Mahomes was 2-1. There's no other player that even has two top 10 years. So you can name Deshaun Watson. You can go through all the lists. It doesn't matter. There's no one else that's been. So Drew Brees has had a consistency that is unmatched except for the guy who some think is the best quarterback that ever walked the planet, at least talent-wise. So Drew Brees this year in QBR, I haven't looked this week, or you know, he was like 7th about a week ago. So, I mean, the guy is still a top quarterback. The fact that the line only moved 1.5 after he was injured makes me – now, the line's moved another 1.5 since, so it's kind of caught up now to what I think it should be. But there's just a general lack of respect for Drew Brees. And to me, that drives liking Atlanta here. And I'd say it's probably my third or fourth favorite pick.
RJ, real quick, does the Davante Adams ankle injury sway you in your opinion on that Packers-Colts game?
So what's the latest status you're hearing?
He's not. He didn't practice yesterday, and his ankle is. They're saying now it's probably going to come down to a game time decision.
Yeah, because if you don't practice third, yeah. I actually, and this was on Mr. Michael Kay's show, so I think it's fair to say my second best bet or best bet. And again, it's what I'm feeling that morning. And again, obviously some of it's been off. Is I really like the Pack in that game. And to me, the driver of, you know, Adams, if he's in or out, the line's going to adjust. So to me, I would wait. Because if you get him, right, and the line, you know, you don't get as many points, yeah, okay, it's fair, right? And if we don't get him, then we should be getting more points. So I would advise, with that being such a big question mark, you wait till game day, see if he's going to play. Because really, there is no game time decision effectively anymore, right? Because if they put him on the active roster, he's going to play,
yep,
typically. So you know what, about an hour 15 before the game?
90 minutes.
Yeah, so to me, this would be a game I'd wait to see that. It's all over Twitter. There's different places to have it. And let the line adjust accordingly and then bet it, I would say. Now listen, if he's playing and it looks like the line's moving, well, you're losing points, you know, bet it quick. But in general, let the information come out. And it's real simple why I like Green Bay. On one side, and it's just one thing on each team, Colts have the worst strength of schedule in the league. And not only that, I would make the case they haven't played one quarterback with true top seven arm talent. The idea that they can throw to the entire field. And, you know, Tannehill is not that guy. Cousins is not that guy. And that's the only two quarterbacks they've played that's any good, I think. So now, Aaron Rodgers, whatever you think of him, he has amazing arm talent. And he's having a good year, right? I've been down on him, but... So I think he throws to different parts of the field in a way the Colts are going to have trouble matching up man-on-man. Because generally, they can say it's the X's and O's or it's the Joes, the Jimmy and the Joes, as the saying goes. And to me, if you're like a Belichick or a great coach, you can actually beat a team on the chalkboard if that team is not multidimensional, right? The Raiders came in there, and Belichick just shut them down because the Raiders, you know, at least at that time, weren't throwing down the field that much. So to me, I think Green Bay is the first team that can attack the whole field, and I don't think the Colts have a great D. I think they have a great scheme, and they can stop limited players. So strength of schedule on one side, Green Bay attacks the whole field, and we're getting points. I'll take the Packers.
RJ, great stuff. We got to run. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thank you, guys.
Good stuff. Guys, by the way, as RJ was going on, Taysom Hill has been named the starting quarterback for the Saints this weekend, and they don't even envision that Jameis Winston will have a package to get to the game. So that's the latest on that Saints-Falcons game. Today on ESPN Daily, the Steelers are 9-0 entering Week 11. Ryan Clark joins to discuss the evolution of Big Ben, the rise of Chase Claypool, and why Mike Tomlin is underappreciated on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go, and we go to, I mean, we love this guy. Paul Feinbaum breaks down college football each and every Friday at 10:30. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
What's up, guys? How are you?
We're doing well. You know, I there's some games that actually interest me, but every week with college football, it's like Wednesday. I'm like, are we gonna make it to Saturday? Thursday, are we gonna get there? What game is gonna get canceled? It just, I hate to be negative. It's difficult during the course of the week to get yourself geared up for these games because by Thursday, Friday, you don't even know if these games are gonna be played.
No, and I mean there are a couple of games down where I live where two different games. They're at the threshold. 53 is the minimum. That if you go below that, you fall into an almost have to cancel. And I mean, coaches left and right saying we're right down to on the line. And you know, at this point, a lot of coaches are just saying, well, you know, we'll play if we can. But everywhere you go this week already, there have been 15 games scrubbed. That ties last week for the most. And listen, look outside, look around. look on the news. It's not getting any better right as the college football season reaches its pinnacle. I mean, we're talking, this is the 12th week. I know a lot of schools just got started, but it will be very interesting and tenuous whether they can get to the finish line.
Yeah, but Paul, it feels like it's going, like, once one of the, you know, one of the teams has it, it goes rampant through the team and even the head coaches. Is it protocols? Is it, you know, where these schools are located? Coaches not wearing their masks? It doesn't seem to have that same kind of,
no.
I mean, guys in the NFL are getting it, but it doesn't feel like it goes through the team as quickly as it's going through these college football teams.
Yeah, I think, you know, remember, college football teams are bigger because they have so many different, you know, walk-ons and there's a lot more personnel. I don't think the travel is quite as buttoned down as the NFL either. And, you know, I think the worst thing is they're on college campuses. And you know, a lot of coaches are saying, well, you know, after Thanksgiving, you know, we'll get a lot better. No, it's not. I mean, you can't walk outside right now without being in jeopardy. I mean, that's just the way we are because of all the resistance, as you guys know. And so, I mean, I think there are a lot more college teams, too. I mean, the NFL, you have 32 teams. They're pretty buttoned down. One other thing about the NFL, there is one voice. There's a uniform protocol. In college football, it's different everywhere you go. In the SEC, if you're positive, they contact trace, which means anyone you've come in contact with. So you know, two positive shut down a program. In the Big Ten, it's a little bit different, but you're also quarantined for 21 days. So you miss half the season or 40%. And that's the problem. You have two of the Big Ten and Pac-12 didn't come back until recently, so it's a mixed mash. And I frankly, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to just, you know, be nebulous here, but I mean the odds of getting the season in are not great.
And Paul, I know when you come on, we always focus on college football, but yesterday on your show, you had Coach Cal and you had Bruce Pearl on, and they were talking about the logistics and dealing with the reality of COVID. What's the confidence of the coaches in the SEC that they're going to be able to get through this basketball season and conference tournaments and NCAA tournament?
It's pretty challenging. Pearl said that they have not had a positive since July, and he said, you know, that's great news, except if you get one now, your whole team's infected and you miss 2 weeks of games. And that's a lot because already the season is shorter. John Calipari, and you guys know him. I mean, he had one of the most unusual takes. And, I mean, he went on for 15 minutes talking about how we have to do this for the kids. I mean, it was a classic recruiting motivational speech that we are literally, it doesn't matter whether the entire country is shut down. We have to have college basketball because these kids need it. And his argument dealt with their mental health. And I'm not being insensitive here, but, you know, there are probably a few things higher on the list of protocols in this country right now than the mental health of 17 to 21-year-old college basketball players on full scholarships.
I think we all agree with that. Paul Feinbaum joins us here, 98.7 ESPN. Looks like we are going to play in the Big Ten tomorrow, and there are a couple of really good games. Just kind of walk us through here. Indiana-Ohio State, which is a battle of two top 10 teams, even though I think Ohio State is about a 3-touchdown favorite, and then Wisconsin and Northwestern. Some good games in the Big Ten tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, in my wildest dreams, the idea of Indiana and Ohio State literally being the best game of the weekend is pretty shocking. But, you know, Indiana under Tom Allen has been very good this year. They pulled some upsets. The Wisconsin game is fairly critical because Wisconsin missed a couple of games, but they are really a good team. So I don't think Ohio State will be challenged. I think Wisconsin may be a little more under the gun. And the game that you didn't mention, but I know you guys will be socially distanced tomorrow at Rutgers watching Jim Harbaugh on his farewell tour.
Is this it, in your mind, is this it for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan?
It seems like it. And, you know, every day somebody, you know, makes a stronger argument that Harbaugh just ought to get out of there. I think, again, trying to guess Jim Harbaugh is impossible because he's literally got a plate around his brain, I think, that prevents him from, using his cognitive skills. But I think he's hoping that somebody in the NFL will come after him, and they may. And that will give Michigan the chance to have a peaceful and amicable departure. But, I mean, it has been brutal the last couple of weeks. I mean, his team has not been close. And the worst part is
You know, Harbaugh comes out every week after the game and talks about how we're not embarrassed, we're not this, and I understand you don't want to lose your program, but he's already lost it. I interviewed a historian in Ann Arbor the other day. Guy's covered the team for 50 years, and he said this is literally the worst fall I can ever recall in Ann Arbor. I mean, and by the way, I mean, you know, there've been some bad coaches there. Rich Rodriguez was there, Brady Hoke was there, but the expectations were so high with this guy, and the disappointment level has exceeded that. It's really out of this world.
Paul, since we're talking about Jim Harbaugh potentially making a jump to the NFL ranks because he's going to be on the outs in Michigan, I wanted to ask you about Ryan Day. I was told by somebody that's associated with the Ohio State program that if the right opportunity presented itself, he would consider jumping from the college ranks to the pros. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I think he's considered. I think, you know, you guys have to help me here. You know, what's the right opportunity in the NFL? Because right now, he is literally in charge of one of the three best programs in college football. And it's not going to change. You know, Ohio State is just as – it's like Alabama and Clemson right now. The recruits go there. The facilities superb. The conference manageable.
It's Paul, didn't they just get the number one kid in the 2022 class?
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, you played the game in the NFL. I don't know what you know what the ideal NFL job would be. I know some wouldn't be ideal, and you guys don't have to look too far for those.
Don't say it. Don't say it, Paul. Stop it.
You said it without saying it. He said it without saying it.
I say this every week, but I really want Harbaugh to go to the Jets. To me,
and that's then a disaster.
Because if that happens, you guys don't even remember this, but I used to be a sports columnist. I mean, I would beg the New York Post to hire me for one season to cover him.
Oh.
Wow. That would be gold.
Paul, what happened to Jim Harbaugh? I mean, did he forget how to develop a quarterback? Like, it seemed like in San Francisco, what he did with Alex Smith, what he did with Colin Kaepernick, now all of a sudden he can't find a quarterback in Michigan. Does that make any sense to me?
It doesn't. I mean, and I heard somebody. It was actually Greenberg the other day. We were on Get Up, and he did a commentary about Harbaugh. And you guys just said it. I mean, he was as good as we have seen in a while. I think the problem with him, and you watch it in the NFL, you have to adapt. Doesn't matter whether you're Bill Belichick or anyone else. You can't just stay the course. And he just kept doing the same thing. He missed the revolution in college football. And, you know, for some reason, he just kept, he was determined. We know what we're doing here, and it finally got away from him, and you can't get it back. I still, for all of it, Paul Feinbaum hates Jim Harbaugh, I really don't. I just think he needs to go somewhere else. And I think in the NFL, he could become successful again because, you know, you get the right quarterback, you get the right system involved, and there's a little bit more time to develop in the NFL. We're in college, there's so many restrictions.
It is a risky proposition at this point if you're going to bring in Jim Harbaugh. Paul, as always, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you next week. We appreciate it.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff. Well, I mean, I'm brilliant all show. I have one hiccup, and you're all over it?
I have to be.
You're an animal.
Well, of course, you know that. But
an animal. All right, the Michael K. Show's 2020 contest continues today, 3 o'clock. The K. Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do is recognize their voice. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. Today, the guys are giving away a Frigidaire 38-bottle wine cooler. It's the 2020 contest brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails on Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. Now, Rick, this is for you. Tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, the flyweight champions go to battle at UFC 255 when DeVazen Figueiredo.
Well done, Dave.
That was right, wasn't it?
Well done.
That was shocking. Well, he defends his belt for the first time against Alex Perez and Dean Ann did this just to make it difficult for me. Valentina Shevchenko defends her crown for the fourth time against Jennifer Maia. Only on ESPN Plus. UFC 255 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Or sign up now to get UFC 255 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for just $84.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/PPV for more details.
I am the smartest man alive!
I can't believe that just happened. Beautifully done. I don't know why you're laughing. I mean, I thought it was going to be just a cavalcade of you being able to enjoy me, you know, stepping on this incorrectly, and I was sensational.
No, it's focused, Dave. That's what happens. It's not you have to focus, because if you don't focus, I'm going to be all over you.
Can we focus on getting to the NFL picks?
Yeah, let's go.
We ain't got a lot of time, man.
We got so much time, we don't need to need all this time. But that's fine. If you guys are in a rush to make our selections, let's do it. Rick Erdy has one in the bank. He took Seattle -3 over Arizona. That's a win. So, Rick, you are leading the way heading into Week 11. You're 14-15-1, which up to date, you're actually 500. I'm 13-17, and Canty is 11-19. As always, you can choose. So you choose to go last, I would imagine.
Yes, sir.
All right, Chris, you want to start us out?
Yeah, I'll start us out, Dave. I am going down to the dirty South. Atlanta had a win for the culture last night when Jeezy crushed Gucci Mane in the versus battle on IG. And I think the Falcons are going to follow that up with a win down in New Orleans this Sunday. So I am taking the Falcons +4 points. I know what RJ Bell said about the Minnesota Vikings, but Dave, listen, something about it. I just feel like the Vikings are due to lay an egg. They've been locked in after the bye week. They're going to have a performance where they're not at their best. And I think the Cowboys catch them slipping. So I'm going to take the Cowboys +7 points. And you know what? The last time this team was on primetime, they got embarrassed. That would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they played the Saints a couple of weekends ago on Sunday night. It's not going to happen again on primetime. I think Tom Brady and them want to make a statement. He said as much this week. So I'm going to take the Buccaneers and lay the 4 points against the Rams.
Oh, we are going head-to-head in a couple of games. I like Taysom Hill. I think they're going to be motivated to play for him. I think that Sean Payton wants to make an example that he can win this without Drew Brees. I'm only giving 3.5. That's a good football team. And I know Atlanta's played better, but I'll take the Saints and I'll lay the 3.5 points.
It's four. It's four, Dave.
Now, pregame.com has 3.
No, it's four. We go by the New York Post. It's 4 this morning.
All right.
Yeah, it's not 3.5. We ain't doing no point shaving.
All right, that's fine, because I have Minnesota -7.5, but according to you guys, that's 7. That's my next pick.
Okay.
I mean, it's the hottest team in the NFL. The Cowboys are slop. I mean, they're unwatchable. I'll take Minnesota and laugh my way to a victory as they beat up on Andy Dalton and the Dallas Cowboys. And lastly, and I tipped my hand earlier this week, and I'm going to go with it on Friday, I get Aaron Rodgers getting a point on the road against Indy. I like that. I'll take that. Green Bay +1. Lock it in.
Green Bay +1. All right, David, I like those picks. I do. I like the picks, and I like your confidence. What I'm going to do is this, David, is I'm also going to take Green Bay. I'm going with my man Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Got to bounce back. Not a great performance. Let me down against Jacksonville. And then I'm also going to take the Miami Dolphins.
Ooh.
Take Dolphins.
What is the number 3?
Yeah, I'll lay the 3 with the Miami Dolphins.
I thought you were afraid of Dolphins.
In this case, I'm going to partner up. These are the North Korean Dolphins I'm going with. I'm going with the weaponized North Korean Dolphins.
Those are the scarier of all said Dolphins.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.